welcome back to another episode of Life Unleashed. Today we have episode 3 of Ask Sarah. What is Ask Sarah? Well, every now and again, I post a call out on my Instagram that asks people to write in their questions. This week, we put it out last night. We had over 40 questions when we got to it this afternoon. So I'm going to divide the questions into two groups, answer some today and some early next week. The first question is from Kayla, who references her dog's separation anxiety. So separation anxiety is such a huge topic that I'm actually in the midst of writing a book on it. If you can't wait for the book, which obviously Kayla can't, it's out next year. The one thing I'll say about separation anxiety is you need to take a deep breath. The more anxious your dog's separation anxiety makes you, the more anxious you'll make your dog, and it goes back and forth. Fortunately, I have two podcasts, podcast number 3 and number 4, devoted totally to this subject, as well as an ebook, which you can download on my website. Lisi asks, funnily enough, how do I train my anxious dog to be home alone? A lot of anxiety with dogs comes from this, do you love me? It's almost a stereotypy. What's a stereotypy, Sarah? A stereotypy is a repetitive behavior that the dog can't get themselves out of. Think of an animal at a zoo pacing back and forth. Think of a dog running back and forth and back and forth and back and forth across its property line. There's a trigger for the behavior, but it's very hard to interrupt it. So with anxious dogs, they might do things when you're home, like lick. They might also come over every 3 or 4 seconds to check, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And by reinforcing these behaviors, simply saying, yes, I love you, I love you, and petting over and over again, you've kind of created a vicious cycle. And with this vicious cycle comes emotional stress when you leave, because there's no reassurance. Dogs don't understand the concept of I'm going to the gym. You know, all they know is they've been closed in the den, they can't get out, and they start to implode. It is a huge topic, and one I devoted 2 podcasts to and an ebook, and I'm writing a book, but it won't be out till next year. So hop on over to podcast 3 and 4. Remember, a big part of anxiety is they don't know how to self-soothe. They don't know how to calm themselves without your omnipresence. Okay, question 3. And between you and me, I wish I had a quick answer for separation anxiety, but I don't. Ivan asks, how to make them stop eating stuff on the ground during a walk? That is a great question. Lots of people ask it. Dogs eat rocks. Dogs eat moss and all sorts of stuff they find. Here's the deal. If every time they grab something off the ground, you're like, ah, no, don't get it. And you run over and you fish it out of their mouth. What you're doing is you're focusing too much attention on the wrong behavior. You are basically conveying prize envy, that whatever they have has value because you're willing to invest energy, action into taking it away. Then it disappears. Dogs can't shift gears like that. Dogs that pick up stuff in their mouth aren't necessarily going to swallow it any more than a baby picking up a stick is necessarily going to try to eat the stick for breakfast. Dogs grab stuff and handle it on the ground for a lot of reasons, including just because it feels novel and it's new. You know, if my baby grabs, I don't know, the remote control, I'm not worried she's going to eat it. Probably a bad metaphor, but you get my drift. So, key thing is dogs are scavengers. They are omnivores. But before you think of a dog being an omnivore, eating a plant and meat, they're basically scavengers. They like to look for stuff. They like to hunt. They like to sniff. And many dogs like to do stuff for attention. So I want you to do 2 things. Take a toy, one of your dog's favorite toys, tie it on a string. So as you're walking them, you can encourage them to carry or to get it, and also play find it. So on the ground, your dog is looking for yummy treats, not boring sticks and rocks and things. How do you play find it? You take some treats, you throw a few on the ground, you say find it. If your dog is confused, which might star, you kind of use your fingers to point out where the yummy treats are. Soon find it means find fun things on the ground. And if you just chill out and stop yelling and grabbing stuff out of your dog's mouth, it should get better fast. Okay, number four, how to pee potty train a 3-month-old golden retriever in your apartment. Well, that is a predicament. Here's the skinny. When puppies have their little puppy teeth, there's also a ring of taste buds around their tongue that make water taste like sugar. Pair this incessant drinking with any existence of bladder muscles. Remember, muscles don't really start firming up till they're 8 months old. Bladder muscles develop gradually, and they need those bladder muscles to hold their urine, right? So I don't know if you're on a walk up, because a golden retriever certainly can't walk down a whole bunch of flight of stairs when it has to go to the bathroom in the morning. What I would strongly recommend you do is use like AstroTurf, or now they have like pans full of cedar chip or mulch chips. Get AstroTurf or some kind of mulch thing, and ideally put it, if you have a garbage chute, put it down for the puppy somewhere outside your apartment or somewhere close to the door or the mudroom. So you're coaching your dog to go towards the door, but since you know they can't hold it, you're using this AstroTurf as like, here, go here until you have bladder muscles. Then gradually take the AstroTurf down, put it outside, and that's how it should go. If you're around all day working from home, you can modify the water so you know when it's coming in and going out. You can look online to see how much water a golden retriever puppy should have a day. And if your golden retriever just drinks constantly, there's your clue. He might be getting too much. Okay, number five, seek what's clean. I guess that's our handle. Seek what's clean. That's a hard one to say. Asks, best potty training tip if you live in a high-rise building. Well, rewind and listen to what I just said with Addie. Okay. Zakina asks, how to teach a puppy to pee on a mat? Well, rewind again. I'll just further say, I'm not sure what mat you want the puppy to pee on, but mats should not be placed in the middle of a floor. They should be placed in a cornered private area. Remember, puppies are prey animals until they have their adult molars, so they're going to want to go to a quiet corner. And if you are trying to get your puppy to pee on a wee-wee pad, put four of them down so it's a nice big area, and then gradually take one away at a time. So you gradually make that area smaller. Okay, Maria asks, what do you think about treadmills for dogs routine? I don't do it. I don't recommend it. I don't do it. Dogs are never walk in a linear fashion. They explore. Treadmill forces a dog to walk in a straight line. I would say please don't do that. Take your dog out for a sniff. There are lots of busy toys. Dogs like to meander. They don't like to be forced to walk over and over. Okay, Linda asks, how do you keep a puppy out of the litter box? Linda. First of all, I call them Tootsie Pops. I have 4 dogs and I have 6 cats. And the bottom line is dogs like to eat poop. The good news is they generally grow out of this by the time they're 2 or 3. I have a puppy named Wahoo who loved litter, scanning the litter box if he could ever get to it, when he was a little puppy. And he's 2 now, and I couldn't get him to eat litter if I stuck it in his mouth. So here's what I do. Whoop, that's my little puppy. Just jumped up. Here's what I do to discourage my dogs from eating litter. I have a little cat door cut into my basement door, and I keep our litter boxes down there. I have a litter box in a room, and the room has an opening of only about 3 inches unless you hit a latch. Like if I have to go in, I can hit the latch and go in, but otherwise it only opens about 3 inches. Dogs can't get in there. We have stairways leading to nowhere. So what I do is I gate the stairway so that they're only about 3 inches at the bottom. The cats can jump over. Actually, it's probably more like 4 or 5 inches. So the cats can sneak under the gate or jump over it. And again, they have their privacy from the dogs. Remember, if the litter is out in the open and your puppy scares your cat while going to the bathroom, you may now have a cat peeing problem because they'll stop using the litter box. So protect that litter box, give your cat some privacy, and don't put too much pressure on a puppy who just wants a little bit of chocolate. Hazel Chow asks, my dog pulls on the leash a lot. I love a good exclamation point, and there's one right there. And when she sees another dog, she gets excited. That's very normal. Let's break down the leash real quickly. It is a human invention. Human invention developed to keep our dogs safe around traffic. So it's what I call a necessary evil. Dogs don't love it, especially if they're not trained to it properly. I'm going to do videos, lots and lots of Instagram videos on how to train a dog to walk calmly on a leash. But it's not their knee-jerk reaction. So if you think of the leash more as a tether and it's trapping, like you probably have seen the elephants that had their little poor little feet tethered and they couldn't move anywhere and it makes us sad. But when a dog now has the tether around their neck and we're jerking on it, somehow we just feel the dog should pay attention and dogs don't get it. So needless to say, when your dog gets excited when it sees another dog, that's called hyperarousal. Hyperarousal involves the release of adrenaline. It gives them all this energy and they pull on the leash. Whoa, it's a lot of layers to this thing, right? So when your dog has all this adrenaline and is pulling on the leash and you're just standing there, or worse, you let them go over to the dog, you're reinforcing that this is a great way to get what I want. The thing you need to do calmly when your dog triggers and sees another dog is you need to point your voice. That means turn your head 180 degrees in the other direction, call out your dog's name, bring your dog away from the other dog. And it could be 10 feet, it could be 20, it could be half a block. Wait until your dog's focused on you to reward them with food or attention. Because if they're being triggered in the moment and you're waving food over their head, they're unlikely to take it, but you're also reinforcing the wrong behavior. So space and time, I always say in my class, space and time, people, space and time. That means get them away from what's triggering them. Give them a little bit of time to breathe normally. I recommend people go to the IAABC to look up trainers in your area. Okay. Lisa asks, any tips for traveling with dogs to an unfamiliar place or friend's house? Whoa, absolutely. One of my huge things in training, if you've read anything I've written, is that all good things happen to dogs when they're on their mat or their place. So in every room of my house, I have multiple mats and the dogs all know where to go. It actually makes them feel secure because they know where to go, and near every mat is a toy basket. And so they'll pick out what they want to chew and lay on their bed. I also teach my dogs that there's no shenanigans in the house. So they don't get too rowdy in the house. They lay on their mats. Now I go to take them over to a friend's house, or I go out for coffee, or I go to the vet. What do I bring? I bring the mat. I bring their familiars. If I'm going to somewhere overnight, I'll bring their familiars. I'll bring favorite bone, favorite toy, mat, their bowl, obviously their food, because dogs don't shift food well. So anytime you go over, anyway, bring your dog's familiars. When you get to the place, remember your dog doesn't see the surroundings. They need to sniff it. So you give them a little virtual tour. And remember, your dog's going to be dysregulated a bit. They're like children. They like their little routine and their place. So keep them with you, even if you have to use a leash. Keep them with you. Keep your mat with you. Give them lots of love. And if They love their crate. Bring that too. All right. My next question is, Sophie asks, my six-month-old is barking a lot. Ignoring doesn't work. Okay, Sophie, couple of things. I don't know what your dog's barking with. It would be good to know. But whether a six-month-old dog is generally doing what I call bratty barking. So they're barking at you because they want you to hurry up and feed them. They're barking at you because they want their bone or their attention or their toy or their treat or whatever it is. They have a lot of amped up energy at that age because of a whole host of reasons. First, they probably lost their puppy teeth, so now they have their adult teeth. They have hormones going, all that stuff. So, number one, prompt your dog all day long by holding out something they value or want, such as their food, toy, or a bone. If they bark, lift that object up over your head, and if they keep barking, put it behind your back, and if they keep barking, put it in the cupboard. What you want to be teaching your puppy to do is sit and watch. Lots of videos on this. Sit and watch. It's super simple. So when you prompt, the behavior you want them to give you without asking is to sit calmly and watch. Barking can be extinguished if it doesn't work, or if it buys isolation instead of inclusion. So if they are barking, you can walk into a bathroom, shut the door, text. They can bark until the cows come home. If they love things, they love their food, they love toys, they love bones and stuff, prompt them. If they bark, you do an opposite action. So it moves away from them. So it's a pronounced opposite action response. What I affectionately call OAR, or opposite action response. Next, you're going to line up some treats on the countertop when your puppy's nice and calm. You're going to hold your finger to your lips, say shh. This, you want this to mean sit and watch. So you can go shh, sit, watch, and then reward them with a treat from the countertop. Shh, sit, watch, reward them with another treat. If they jump up for the treats, push them away. If they bark, ignore them. But you're teaching your puppy that shh means sit, calm down, and watch me. Okay, so Izzy asks, what can I do when my 1.5-year-old Havanese refuses to go for a walk? Well, that bodes a good question because Havanese is generally a smaller dog, smaller than 20 pounds. Ask how I know this, because I have two. Cheerful little breed. And if your dog is refusing to go for a walk, it's for one of a couple of reasons. One, they don't feel like going for a walk. Two, they're scared of something. Three, it's a good way to get your attention. So let's go to one. Some dogs really don't like leaving the den. So your home is their den. Your yard is the territory. Everything else is the world beyond. Dogs, not all dogs enjoy walks. They would much rather go to a park, get put on a leash, allow them to sniff around. They'd rather go to town and meet people if they're people affectionate. Walking around the block is something you can do for you, but if your dog doesn't like it or is stressed out every time you go, don't take them. Number two, they're afraid of something. So remember, Havanese is a little dog. Little dogs have the heart of a big dog, but they still are fully aware they're prey animals. And there can be something startling your dog on that walk. Maybe at 4 o'clock, you know, your neighbor puts out her two labradoodles and they bark up and down the fence line. It scares your dog. Fear can arrest a lot of behavior. So if your dog's afraid to go, again, you're going to want to say, should I be taking my dog in the first place? And if they're just afraid of one thing, let's say they're just afraid of the house down the way that has those labradoodles in the front, you can do a couple of things. You can use a treat cup. You just put cups in a treat and shake it, treat cup. And that can excite your dog once they know that the sound is something positive to look forward to. The other thing is you can encourage your puppy when going by that scary thing to cross over. So you are always placing yourself between your dog and the distraction. You can also pick them up and walk them by something threatening. People always ask me, should I pick my little dog up if we're attacked by a big dog off leash? And the question would be, yes, pick your little dog up, because otherwise it will be injured and you might be too. So if your little dog's refusing to walk just to be kind of a nudge, use a treat cup on your walks. I always have this little song that I use with my daughters that I do with my dogs. It's, let's see if I can remember it. Waddle, waddle, waddle like a penguin. Quack, quack, quack like a duck. Gallop, gallop, gallop like a pony. Trot, trot, trot like a horse. And I would just make anything up, honestly. They would always ask me to sing it again. I would never know what I said. But the bottom line is I would, when they didn't want to go and they threw a little hissy fit, I would change my pace and I would like turn into a silly goose and they would follow along. Works for dogs too. Last thing I will say is you can play the scurry scurry game. How do you play the scurry scurry game? You run back and forth in a hallway or in your yard. You say, scurry, 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 as you're like running like a crazy person. And then you just drop treats after 10 or 20 steps. And then when your dog is refusing to go with you, you can scurry, trot, skip, shake your treat cups. Good luck. Okay. The number one thing, mind you, is don't pay attention to a dog that's doing a behavior you don't want to encourage, because you're inadvertently reinforcing it rather than extinguishing it. Oh my gosh, this is a fun question. Victoria asks, all in caps, OMG, I was going to call you. I'm assuming I might know this woman named Victoria, but anyhow, she was going to call me. I'm having huge problems. The puppy only sleeps till 4:15 a.m. and now Rory jumps up and wants to go out. How can I get the puppy to sleep later? I'm losing it. Total sleep deprivation. Here's the thing. Here's the messed up thing people do when they bring home a puppy. The puppy is just left, in most cases, its mother and its litter mates. And it's used to sleeping in a little pig pile, puppy pile. And it's used to having heartbeats all around. So they bring the puppy home. They put it in a crate. Crates can be startling. You want to sell a crate like a crib. But if you just throw your dog in there and shut the door, they're going to be stressed out. Then every time the puppy cries, every couple of hours, they're coming out of their deep sleep. They're going to the light sleep. And they're like, where's my family? They're lost and confused and sad. And then the person wakes up and runs them outside. And this goes on and on until I get an email like that. So the bottom line is a puppy should be in a hibernation-like sleep for 11 to 12 hours every night without interruption. If you have a puppy that missed this memo, which many puppies do because we're always interrupting them, then you've got to reset the clock. In terms of resetting the clock, what does that look like? When I first bring a puppy home from the breeder, or I'm imprinting a puppy here at Camp Sarah, I spend the first two or three nights with the crate in my bed with the puppy in the crate. In the crate, I put in like sweatshirts or blankets. I make it cozy. I get this little stuffed animal with a heartbeat. It's called the Snuggle Puppy, although there are a bunch of varieties. I'll even just put stuffed animals in there just so the puppy feels tactily cozy. Now, unlike many trainers, I'm not worried if they have a PP accident in the night. I don't like dividers. I find them just ridiculous. But I've been training dogs for 40 years. If your dog's having a PP accident every single night, you need to take their urine in for a quick check. And yes, if they're having PP accidents every night, you might need to get up once in the night to take them out. But it shouldn't be a big attention time or drama. Meanwhile, so I've been doing Camp Sarah for 7 years now. I haven't had one dog that I've needed to get up with in the night unless they had a urinary tract infection or like a parasite. So you put the crate on your bed and you black out that room, pull the shades. I would put on sound canceling music or like the sound of the oceans, like some noise canceling device. Now, go to sleep. And when the puppy wakes up at whatever hour they wake up, you're simply going to say, shh, shh. Put your hands in the crate so they can lick them. And then do not get up for love or money. Shh, shh. But you're there. You're present, but you're not accessible. And again, if you're really worried your dog is sick and has to go out, by all means, run him out, but no attention. Put him right back. So once the dogs have spent two or three nights on the bed with my reassurance, then I put them down next to the bed so I can reassure from above. And then once the puppies are locked into their sleep schedule, it's nourishing. They like it. I need 8 hours of sleep. If somebody woke me up with a sound, with a smoke alarm every night periodically, I would be frazzled and frustrated and very hard to have a conversation with. So get that puppy on a sleep schedule, stick to it. I also am a big proponent of giving puppies two quiet naps a day. I have different sleep-wake cycles depending on the dog's age, but the wake cycle in the morning should be an hour and a half to 2 hours. Then they go back in the crate for a nap. Then they come out after 2 or 3 hours. Then you interact with them a bit. They eat their lunch. They go back in the crate. Anyhow, a whole topic in and of itself. And by all means, Victoria, if you know me, call me and I'm happy to do a virtual or private session to get you back on track. Christine asks, moving my dog along when standing and fixating on another dog. I have the perfect answer. I think I even have a video of this. The most important thing you do, Christine, is you don't stand, pull, or look at your dog. So if, Christine, you're standing and pulling your dog, they're not getting it, right? It's annoying. So their adrenaline pumps. When a dog feels that their neck is caught in a trap, they pull harder to get away from it. They don't understand the concept of a leash. So let your leash go nice and loose. When it's time to leave, turn 180 degrees, your entire body. Take your voice, throw it 180 degrees, and very calmly say, leave it. Leave it, or on by, or we're like whatever phrase you use, I don't care. I use leave it, and I just give a few tugs with my arms straight, so I'm tugging under my puppy's chin, and then just keep going. Train's leaving the station. If they hear your voice heading off in another direction, they'll pay attention. And if you want to boost your voice's attractiveness, take a treat cup. But again, don't call at your dog. Don't look at your dog. Don't pull your dog. Simply, very calmly, 180 degrees, walk away, calling to an object in the distance. James asked, how do I get my dog to obey on the first command? Great question. Remember, James, you're teaching English as a second language. So sit, sit, sit is a totally different direction than sit. What I want you to practice is labeling the behavior for a solid week before you request or command your dog to do anything. How do you label? You say sit when they are doing the behavior. You do not say sit to prompt them. So this one's easy. Take a treat or a toy that they love. Stuffed toy, bone, whatever. Something they like. If you're using a treat cup, shake a treat cup. Hold that at least a foot to a couple feet above their head. When you shake the cup or bait them with their toy, if they jump up, simply lift the toy up. Opposite action response, OAR. Opposite action response. If they jump, the toy goes further away. When you hold it and they're not jumping, just tilt the object like above their head. Most dogs sit because that's just the way they move, their physiology. When they sit, say sit as they're doing the behavior. Also label other words like outside. Don't stand there with a silly expression on your face saying outside 16 times as your dog literally has no clue. Say outside as you are going outside. Don't look at your dog because they don't speak English. They don't know what you're talking about. So I see it all the time with come. People stand there and shout come at their dogs. And I'm like, the dog doesn't know what come means. And standing directly at your dog looks more threatening. Why don't you run away shaking a tree cup or a toy, run away from your dog and say come as they're running towards you, then they might figure it out. So, great question. Thank you for asking. Remember, label, don't command for at least 1 week, and prompt your dog by offering them things and waiting for the behavior you're trying to teach them. Okay. Tati asks, how to make my dog stop barking at any sound outside? Well, that's a good question, and we need to do a podcast on barking. So, to your dog, however old they are, this sound means danger's afoot. It could be a sight or a sound that's stimulating their focus, but every time they bark and the thing moves away, it reinforces the behavior. Probably been going on a year. All right. Now, every time they bark and you get frustrated, which I can only imagine happens multiple times a day, you're also reinforcing the behavior because you're paying attention to the behavior. There are a couple of things. Your dog perceives their role in your life to be border patrol. So they're probably perched at the window all day long, ready to go to battle upon the sight of anything. So, one thing I like to teach my dogs is a safe, quiet space. That safe, quiet space should not be near the windows. It should be in like the inner sanctum of the den, maybe in the kitchen, someplace away from windows. I like to gate the area off until my dog feels nourished by being in that space. I like to play James Taylor, classical music, you know, some birds chirping in the tropics, some sound that cancels out everything else that's going on. Or you can keep your dog on a leash and keep them with you to kind of reset. Listen, instead of barking at the window all day long, why don't you lay in this cozy mat? Could be an old sweatshirt of yours, depending on the dog size. Chew on this bone. You have to give them another reason for living, number one. Number two, if your dog is barking at the window, you don't want to discipline them because discipline generally comes across as like, stop it, shut up, quiet, the dog's barking. Oh, I just scared my little puppy. Come here. Oh, see, I got my dog's barking just because when you shout, it sounds like you're barking. So now both my little dogs were dead asleep. I do apologize to them. And now they're up thinking, somebody's coming to the house. Hey, I was just kidding, guys. Come here, find it. I always have treats in my pocket so I can whip them out anytime. Here you go. Tell my dogs to find it. So in the case your dog is barking at the window, stay calm. If you're supervising your dog, you can let them drag a leash. You can make a treat cup full of lots of snacks. Now this has two outcomes. So if my dog's barking and I shake my treat cup and say, oh, it's nothing, come on back, and I give them a treat and a bone and they settle, great. A lot of dogs take the treat and go right back to the window. And you're like, well, that didn't work. That's why I like to leave a leash or have a gated area so that when I call my dog back from the window, I can either sit or step on the leash to calm them down. I sure wish I could come over to your house and help you in person. But those are some things to get started with. And we are going to do a barking podcast in the very near future. Okay, so let's see. I have Grace who asks, puppy is now tall enough to counter surf. How do I nip this in the bud? Well, Grace, do I have an answer for you? First of all, everybody listening, think where you focus all your attention when you're in the kitchen. Light bulb on the counter. So as soon as a puppy is old enough to get their little paws up there, they're going to want to see what you're looking at, especially because it smells good. Now, what does everybody do when their dog looks at the counter? They go, ah, they push them off. Sometimes people like sprint across a room just to push their dog off the counter, or worse, the dog learns not to jump on the counter when you're there because it's competition. They learn to only jump on the counter when you're out of the room. Smart dog. So how do you address counter surfing? Number one, don't focus on the counter surfing. It's normal. Most dogs do it until they're discouraged not to. I walked in one day, Wahoo, he's a comedian. I walked in, he was like standing on our dining room table. I'm like, excuse me. He was 5 months old. He couldn't have been cuter. I think my son took a picture. He whipped out his camera and told Wahoo to stay, took a picture, and then I told him to get off. He's 5 years old. He only has stepped on the table one other time, so twice when he was a puppy, and I handled it calmly. You always handle things calmly. If you bring a lot of drama and shouting, it doesn't work. So stop doing that. And don't put shock collars on your poor animals in the house. If your animal's getting shocked in their den where they should feel safe and comfortable, it's going to mess with their head. You're going to have a very neurotic dog. Please, for the love of God, everybody, don't put shock collars on ever. That would be my premise. But don't put them on when your dog is in their house. There's a much simpler way. What's the simpler way? Okay, number one, make sure your dog knows where to go and what to do in each room of the house, especially the kitchen. Put a mat down. Get some really good toys. Split antlers. Bento bones, things to chew, things to play with. Put that toy basket down near the mat. So it's their like a little PlayStation that they have in the kitchen. Send them there often before giving them treats and toys and attention. Go to your mat, have them, you know, sit or lie down or just be still, give them a treat. And if everything good happens on the mats, guess where your dog's going to go to most of the time? You're right, the mat. Second, play a little game. Take your dog's toy, something they like a tennis ball, put it on the countertop. What are they going to do? They're going to jump right away. You could even do this with treats. The minute they jump, take the tennis ball and push it back further on the counter. Now, next, ask them to sit and watch and give them their tennis ball. You're teaching them how to ask when they want things that might be on the countertop. So what if they ask for your chicken souffle? A lot of dogs would ask for that because it smells great. So you need to do a little technique I call blocking, where you just step into the space they're occupying and then redirect them to their mat and bone. It literally makes no sense. To your dog, your countertop is like an outcropping or somewhere to aspire to get to. So stay calm. If you have a frenetic dog, you probably need more help than I can give you on a podcast, but you can also tether them during meals, which just means secure them to something that on a leash that keeps them kind of localized on their mat. If you can't think of anything that would hold your dog, you can just open the door and close the handle in the door. But again, you want to keep teaching them, if you want something off the counter, sit and look at me. If I block you and send you to your mat, it means no go. And teach them where to go and what to do and pay a lot of attention to what they're doing right versus freaking out with what they're doing wrong. Okay. Michael asks how to stop counter surfing. I just answered it. So rewind, Michael. Check it out. KK asks, how do I get my dog to like other dogs? She barks at all other dogs, big or small. I am going to go out on a limb and assume that KK has her dog on a leash. Dogs on a leash feel threatened. Their body is compromised. They're often forced to face other dogs. Dogs never greet face to face. Only humans. Dogs always greet sniffing each other's butt, their hair, their ears. They're always greeting at angles, never face to face. So some dogs just don't like other dogs. They've been humanized and so much they just like people. It's not horrible, but if you really want to help your dog like other dogs, you've got to do it off leash or at the very least on a very long line. I have this thing I sell on Amazon. It's called a romp and play. It's like 30 feet long. Then she can navigate. Then she can engage with other dogs. Plus, you've got to find a dog that wants to help you out because dogs don't like being barked at any more than people like being yelled at. So I would get to a dog park and let her hide under you. Give her rewards for any even if she looks around at the other dogs, tell her, yes, good, and give her a reward. So you're rewarding her for looking at other dogs. Start there and work on that slowly. Don't ask her to greet another dog on a leash. It's obviously a trigger, if I'm correct in thinking that you're walking on a leash. Carol asks, how do you prevent your puppy from jumping on the couch? Great question, Carol. I just answered it in an Instagram that's coming out in a couple of days. First thing you need to do, teach your puppy to go to a mat. That is their spot. What generally people do when their dog jumped, I just had a private today and the woman ran over when the dog was on the couch screaming off. And I said, the problem with screaming off when your dog is already up is you're labeling off as being on the couch and you're giving your dog tons of attention for jumping up on the couch in the first place. Light bulb moment. She's like, fascinating. You're totally right. So what did I do? I went over and I guided the puppy off. I said off when the four paws were on the floor. And then I introduced her to mat training. So if every room you share has a little area for the dog, it could be right next to the couch. That's where I put my blankets. It can be right next to the couch, but not on it. Has some little toys in a pile or, you know, some bones in a little basket. Then the dog feels like, oh, I know where I go in every room. This is good because you focus on telling them what to do, not freaking out at what they shouldn't do. So you just say, on your mat, give them attention, love them, give them, you know, they have their toys or give them a treat. All good things happen on their mat, so send them to their mat all day. They're on the couch, just chill out. Dogs jump on a couch because where are we sitting all the time? On the couch. It smells good. It feels good. Just calmly, you can leave a little dragging leash if you're chaperoning your dog, or you can just calmly direct them, oh, sweetie, on your mat, and stop addressing the couch until they've got this down. It's generally so important to teach your dogs what to do than giving them attention for what not to do. If they get more attention for being annoying, guess what you're going to end up with? An annoying dog. Okay, that wraps another session of Ask Sarah. I love it. I have more questions. So again, if you didn't hear your question read online, it just means I didn't get to it today. I will be doing another Ask Sarah this week and next week, and I'm happy to answer all the questions that come in. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.